This is the Teachable Soul Podcast. Because we cannot possibly live long enough to make all the mistakes ourselves, let's take a few moments to learn from the mistakes of others. The Teachable Soul Podcast, where guests and listeners like you share stories of failure and teachable moments on the journey to success. Here's your host, Kat Daniels.
Welcome to the Teachable Soul Podcast. I am your host, Kat Daniels, and today I have with me Anca Herman, who is a passion business coach, podcast host, certified clarity coach and mentor, online tech-loving geek, teacher, dressmaker, and crazy dog lady. In 2004, she quit her IT job in the UK and moved to the south of Spain to start her own sewing business with nothing other than plenty of enthusiasm and a love for sewing. Years of demanding clients, taking advantage of her people-pleasing nature, led her to burnout, which turned out to be a blessing in disguise. Today, she brings her curiosity, creativity, intuition, plus her analytical mind, business, and tech knowledge to the table to help others turn their passion into a business. Welcome, Anca.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Of course.
I'm excited to be here.
Yes, I'm excited to have you on. I am a people pleaser myself, so I am super excited to talk to you about this today.
Yeah, hello to the soul sister.
Right, exactly. And the other soul sisters out there. So do you want to tell us a little bit about your transition from your IT, you know, probably corporate-ish job in the UK and why you decided to move to Spain?
Yeah, I stumbled into IT, well, you know, more or less by accident, and I really loved it for about a decade. And then things started to change a bit because all of a sudden, I was working in software development. So I'm a programmer, and so I love living in code and talking to clients and basically creating tools to make people's lives easier. So that was, you know, what I was doing. And then the banks that would normally hire me started to give these kind of projects to outsourcing companies in India, wherever. Right. So and that means the job actually changed. So from programming and creating, all of a sudden it was sitting in meetings all day. And I knew that wasn't my thing. So there was this sense like, you know, I can't really see myself last year. And the other element of it was a bucket list trip to Peru in 2001 or 2000. And I remember in this tiny little Andes village, there was a little village where their specialty was carving out little boxes out of pumpkins. And this little old man who'd carved out this box for me, explaining the story that he'd carved in there, all of a sudden he turns around and says, "¿Y tú qué haces? And you, what do you do?" Mm-hmm. And I'm like, holy, you know, what am I going to say to him? You know, like, I'm writing workflow applications for risk assessment algorithms, and I'm like, what, you know? And there was this sense like, what am I doing with my life? Mm-hmm. And I kind of literally knew in that moment that I wasn't gonna last much longer in the IT industry. Right. And so shortly after, you know, I'd got hooked on studying Spanish, and so trips to Spain were kind of the logical thing to do. Mm-hmm. And on one of those trips, I came to Granada in the south of Spain, and I really had this strong sense of home, that sense like, boy, I'd love to live here. Mm. And so I traveled quite a bit. You know, as an IT contractor, you have a lot of free time and you can, you know, be quite flexible. And so I traveled a lot, and I've been to a lot of places where I thought, oh, well, actually, I would quite like to come back here one day. But I'd never had that strong sense of, I don't want to go back home to London, and I don't want to leave. You know, I want to stay here. And so I thought, there's something, I don't want to ignore that. I don't want to look back 10, 20 years later thinking, oh, I wonder what life in Spain would have been like. And so I thought, you know what? You know, the IT industry is going in a direction that I'm not all too keen about. There was the age thing as well. I was about 37 at the time. And so there was a sense like, okay, if project finishes now, I can still call up a recruiter, call up, you know, some colleagues, whatever, and get myself a new project. And I was thinking, you know, fast forward 10, 15 years, like, you know, I didn't like the idea of me sending out resumes for programming jobs at the age of 50 plus, right? So I thought actually now is a good time to change tack again. Mm-hmm. And so that's how this all came about. So there was really this crazy idea. If I were to move to Spain, what on earth would I do for a living? And what popped to mind was actually I'd have a sewing studio, because sewing had been my hobby. So it was something that I'd always loved to do. Mm-hmm. And my idea of heaven was to just be able to spend every day, all day doing that. And so that's how that came about.
Oh, okay. So you really were just following all of your passions kind of at once.
Sort of, yeah. Yeah.
That's really cool though. I mean, it's, you know, there's so many people who talk about following their passion and things like that. And, you know, actually putting things in action to follow that are sometimes really hard, because oftentimes, you know, we build up this whole life where not necessarily fake, but it's definitely kind of cookie cutter, and it's built because originally, I mean, this is how I did it. So honestly, a little bit.
Well, I did until then, for sure. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It's built on like my parents' values, you know, and the way I was raised and things like that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And then you get to a certain point and you're like, but like, this is cool and all, but this isn't what I want.
Yeah. And is this really all there is to it?
Exactly.
And I think people often like, yeah, I remember actually a couple of years ago, I spoke at a conference and I was, you know, sharing the whole story and the people pleasing thing and whatever. And the one thing people came back to me like during the break and after the talk was, hang on a second. What, like, you just quit your job and moved to Spain? That was the part. And people, everybody would go, oh, I'd love to do that too. I'd love to move to Italy. I'd love to move here. I'd love to move there. And then there was always the but.
Right.
But, you know, I can't do this because of that, because of this, because of that. Mm-hmm. And I always thought, you know, and I didn't know anybody really in Spain. So it wasn't that I had the support network or the contacts or anything. Like, I didn't have anything.
Right.
But I really thought, I mean, I guess it comes down to what do you fear more, right? Mm-hmm. To go for, you know, whatever the passion, the dream is and fall flat on your face, or to keep going how you're going, you know? So, and I actually always thought, I don't want to, like, for me, the idea of coming to the end of my life, as kind of dramatic as that sounds, and the things that you never know, it might be like tomorrow and it might be in 40 years time. But like, when I get to that point and look back, and the idea of having sort of squandered away my life, not having done what I felt drawn to doing, that for me felt much worse than the risk of, you know, following that crazy idea and falling flat on my face.
Because
if it goes wrong, well, what's the worst thing that can happen? You know, then it just goes wrong. And I knew there was this thing that, you know, going on a holiday somewhere is one thing, living there is another. And I didn't know whether I would like to live in Spain. You know, I knew I loved it for holidays, but then, you know, the same thing that you like about it for a holiday might drive you crazy when you live there, but you can't know until you actually do it. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, well, I'd rather do it. And then if it goes well, fine. And if not, at least I have it out of my system.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. I just quit my IT tech job. Funny story, to start this podcast on a whim.
How cool is that?
Yeah. Right. And my deal is like, I did it because, you know, if the worst of the worst happens, okay, and it's just really, really awful, I'm going to learn that it's really, really awful, but I'm probably going to, at least, because this is something I really want to do right now, I'm at least going to have fun and enjoy the time that I'm spending doing it versus being completely miserable, honestly, in the like IT tech industry, you know, position that I was in.
Yeah. Makes all the sense in the world to me.
Right. So you quit your job in IT in the UK and up and moved to Spain, but you realized that, like, after having probably moved to Spain, you realized that some of your people pleasing ways was at least part of your burnout at the time, right?
Absolutely.
So what made you realize that?
Well, you know, at the height of it all, we would have bumped into each other in the street and you would have said, hey, how are you? And I'd burst out into tears, you know. Oh. Right. And it was funny because it was, you know, that horrible story about throwing a frog into hot water, you know, and it jumps out, and then, mm-hmm. you know, throwing the frog into cold water and then slowly warming up the water and the frog won't notice. That's a bit what happened. That's why it took so long. And right. if you ask my mom, like, she will tell you that I'd always been kind of like, you know, Mrs. Nice Girl, you know, mm-hmm. and always like having this people pleasing tendency that I wasn't really aware of. And my mom would say when I was 10, you know, he said, you let your friends boss you around and I never really felt taken advantage of or anything. Mm-hmm. And I never had a problem in the UK, in Australia where I lived, in Germany, like nowhere was that ever a problem, mm-hmm. at least not for me, right? And then I came to Spain. And so I deal, you know, especially specializing in flamenco dance costumes. So you deal with mostly Spanish clients. And, you know, and there was a bit of that naivety and innocence and ignorance about having my own business. Mm-hmm. Because I somehow, like, my understanding was that, okay, it's my job to give my clients what they ask for, you know, mm-hmm. or give my clients what they want. Mm-hmm. And it didn't even occur to me that I had a say in that, right? So that was one part of it. And right. and then what happened, especially in the beginning, you know, if you kind of, I hustled for about a year before I even got anybody to buy a skirt from me, right? And then things started, you know, to take off. And so there was more and more orders coming in. But initially, it grew slowly, mostly through word of mouth. And so initially, you have like, after a year of hustle, you finally have a couple of clients, right? So mm-hmm. and if somebody goes and says, oh, you know, I have to pick up the kids. And I have to be at the theater at 8 and I really don't have time to come and pick up the dress. Would it be okay? Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm like, yeah, okay. I've got to take the dog for a walk anyways. I'll take the thing up there, you know? And so mm-hmm. I didn't think anything of it. And now next thing I know, the next client would go, oh, actually, you know, but I need you to bring, like, then it wasn't, could you please? And it was like, I need you to bring the dress right. wherever or meet more wherever. And mm-hmm. then there I was. Well, first of all, I only had 2 clients, so I had time. That mm-hmm. wasn't the thing. There was this like, ooh, I did it for the other one. I can't really say no to this one now because they all know each other. Mm-hmm. And so I would do the favor for her as well.
Right.
And then, you know, as you can imagine, before I know it, I had the reputation, like, you just tell her to come and she'll come.
Right.
And that is also fine when you have 3 clients. But as things went on over time, and all of a sudden I'd have like 10, 20 projects going on at any one time, that was exhausting. Right. And I sometimes felt like the stuff they would ask me, you know, like, come, you know, bring the stuff or pick something up on a Sunday evening at 10 in whatever theater, but then it was already, no, you can't bring the dog because, you know, somebody might complain. And mm-hmm. and I thought, well, I don't really want to do that.
Right.
And then my reaction was always, well, like, you shouldn't even ask me that. I shouldn't have, like, I kind of, the idea of saying no was like just brought up such a resistance and so much fear because, you know, it's a small town. They all know each other, right?
Right.
So, and there was always this, if I, you know, if it's about bringing a dress to the theater, you know, if I don't go, she's mm-hmm. got nothing to wear. So I mess up her performance, right? And the only mm-hmm. thing people will remember is, oh, there was drama with the dressmaker.
Right, know? Exactly.
And nobody will remember, you know, how that all came about. Mm-hmm. And then I thought, well, then she'll be peeved off and then she'll tell everybody else, you know, and before I know it, you know, my little fledgling business is in ruins.
Right.
You know, and so I did, you know, and I really wore myself out and the pressure built up, like the more clients I had and everybody came and everybody was like really selfish in that way. Everybody, they wouldn't, you know, and it cost me the world to say no. And even when I tried, you know, they were still like, yeah, but, you know, well, I understand that you in bed with a fever, but I need my thing. You know, yeah. There was really like, you know, I have to go somewhere else. Well, they can wait. I need mine, you know, so they wouldn't even make a no easy. And yeah, so I found it literally impossible, and the pressure built up to a point. And I really was convinced I had a cultural problem, you know, because that same thing wouldn't happen with international clients. You know, there was this more sense of consideration, like it wouldn't occur to somebody from the UK or somebody from the States to say, well, you know, I need this and I need it now, you know, even if it's a Sunday or whatever. And yeah, and that built up slowly to this point where, you know, I didn't even know where I was anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. And when you get, you know, it's kind of a slow progression like that. It starts slow, but then you get like in so deep, it's hard. It's even harder at that point.
Absolutely.
In the beginning, you know, type thing. So yeah. I feel your pain there. Yeah. So what did you do? So what happened?
Well, what happened? It really like blew up. It came to this, well, climax in a sense, you know, and which was probably at the time, I thought it was like literally the worst moment of my life.
Right, of course.
And in hindsight, it was like, oh God, that was the gift I needed. You know, well, if you're so thick, then you need something that kind of harsh. And what happened, I had a project for a dance group, like a dance school. And it was about, I don't know, 30, 40, whatever outfits that had to be finished for a particular day. And it's usually really stressful and a lot of work and nights and whatever anyway. And then they had like a couple of days before, turns out they were going to get some tops for whatever, because they don't, you know, they have like more than one outfit for a performance. And so there was some top that they were going to buy, but then they couldn't find 8 identical tops in all the different sizes. And like 3 days before, all of a sudden, no, now you also have to make another 8 tops for these people, you know, by the day after tomorrow. And so in the end, I worked through literally, like not estimate, like literally 4 days and 3 nights before the performance, right? And and there would be neighbors would be helping and picking up stuff and taking stuff somewhere. And I would, like in those 4 days, I slept like 20 minutes on the tiled floor next to the dog. So I wouldn't kind of relax enough because I thought like a little bit more comfortable and I'm not going to wake up until next week. And, you know, and then literally arriving at the theater, like, you know, 10 minutes before the performance, and they're all dressed and whatever, and everybody had their dress on, and I was like, and in the end, the performance came and went, and there were two people who still owed me money, and they went on holiday, you know, and in Spain, it's like that was the end of June, they wouldn't be back until September, and might not even resume the classes, so there were like two dresses where they didn't even pay what was outstanding, and that was for me where I thought, you know what, I'm over this stuff, right? I'm so over it. I was just like, you know what, if live your dream is that, like literally I don't want it, and if that means that they all stay away, and if that means that I'm going to live in, you know, be homeless in the street, then bloody so be it. There was really that moment where it was like, you know what, this is worse than whatever can happen if I say no. And then that was that moment where I thought, you know what? I'm over taking dresses to the theater on a Sunday night. And I'm over doing this and doing that and putting up with people not showing up and all the stuff that I had put up with.
Right.
But because now the alternative, the consequences that I'd feared so much, you know, seemed kind of small compared to what I'd already, you know, what I'd already lived. And that's when I then started, like next time somebody came and said, well, look, you know, I need you to bring that dress to the theater. I said, well, you know what, sweetie, I can't do that. And, you know, like fully aware, you know, like voice trembling, heart rate up, you know,
right,
palms sweating, expecting, you know, the whole upset at me. And then, you know, and I was expecting to feel like I felt as a little girl, you know, when my parents would tell me off, you know, and I really expected to feel like that and hating it all the way. And she goes, oh, okay, all right, then I'll pick it up on Monday then. And I'm like, what? Hang on a second.
Right.
Like, something isn't cool. And it was really literally that moment, like, hang on a second, that was fun, let me try that again. And so next time somebody came, I also made like a mental blacklist. There was the thing like, okay, you pull one off, like not showing up for a fitting without letting me know, you know, that you go straight on the mental blacklist. And that means I'll finish what I've got going on for you, but next time you want something, I'm busy, right?
Right. So this is the
last thing I ever make for you. And it kind of also seemed to shift how I came across, because I was kind of approaching conversations more like, come on, give me one. I'm just waiting for you to put your foot in. And so also that I found out people kind of didn't, all of a sudden didn't do the things I was kind of almost waiting for them to do.
Yeah.
And yeah, next time I said no, there was like, same thing happened. And all of a sudden, like literally what, the moment that became clear, like literally clear, boy, it had never been about them. The pressure had never come from them.
Right.
The whole time the pressure had come from that chain of consequences that I thought I knew for sure was inevitable if I said no.
Right.
And realizing that, well, no, actually, I was totally wrong about that in 9 out of 10 cases. And even in the 10th case, when they might have gotten upset, that also didn't mean that they wouldn't come back a week later. And realizing that it really had all been, I mean, I felt stupid, like literally I felt stupid. I felt humbled. I thought, oh God, I've put myself, because I was kind of very on that high horse, you know, I'm Mrs. Good Girl and these right. Spanish people boss me around here. You know, they're so inconsiderate. And I was very much on that self-righteous victimhood high horse, and then all of a sudden I saw it. It was like, okay, culturally there are differences, you know, people here are more straightforward in asking for what they want, but then I realized, well, they can also take a no, you know, and they couldn't even imagine that, well, if you don't want to do it, just say so, and they couldn't even imagine how that could be a problem. So I realized, well, actually, it was just that whole story that I've made up about what saying no would bring with it. And that really was like, oh boy. Yeah. Total game changer.
Wow. That's awesome. And that's so like introspective of you to realize that it was totally you that had kind of built up what saying no would do in your own head. And it wasn't really about you saying no. It was about what you thought was going to happen afterwards. You know?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that came years later. So, I mean, I wasn't a quick learner, that's for sure.
Well, as a people pleaser myself, I think that I have also since learned that it's okay to say no sometimes and that people aren't going to blow up at you if you say no. But I think personally that a lot of that, I mean, for me anyways, it comes from kind of my childhood. I mean, yeah. I think everything that we do comes from our childhood.
Absolutely.
But, you know, when I was a kid, if my parents would ask me to do something and I would try to say no, I would get berated and yelled at, or they would get mad, or, you know, whatever the case may be.
Yes. Same for me.
Yeah. But that's because, you know, we're kids and there are parents and it's their job to kind of tell us, you know, I'm a parent now myself, so I can understand a little bit more now as an adult that it's their job to kind of tell us what to do. But at the same time, back being raised 20 years ago and 30 years ago and 40 years ago was a whole lot different than it is today, you know, and we know a lot more than we did back then, for sure.
Absolutely. And I mean, I've thought about that as well, you know, because I'm, you know, people who know me would usually say, you know, that I'm outgoing and confident, like nobody would think, you know, I'd have this thing going on. And then thinking about where that would, like, where could that possibly come from? And I'm like, well, actually, it's pretty easy to trace, just like you said, you know, like because when I was like little, until I was 3, you know, what happened was my dad was only like 21 when I was born. So he wasn't even finished with uni or anything. And so mom had to go back to work, which means, you know, my grandparents took care of me.
Right.
And now at the age of 3, I was then, you know, okay, you're old enough now to go to kindergarten. So that means that's when I basically started to live with my parents. And for me, it was like, you know, as if you take a kid away from their mom.
Yeah.
It was like, what's going on here? And so there was this sense like, nothing is unconditional. Like nothing is safe in that sense.
Security.
You know? Mm-hmm. And so there was like my way to kind of make sure I won't get sent away again, you know,
yeah.
was a bit like, yeah, better be the good girl, you know, better do and exceed the, meet and exceed the expectations.
Yeah.
You know, that was me, you know, always really excelling at school, you know, never doing anything. Like I was like really literally Mrs. Good Girl to quite a degree. Like my rebellious nature sort of has come out much later. And, the more adventurous part, like all of that, more courageous, more adventurous. Like I get worse with age, you know, you don't even want to know what I'm going to be up to at 80.
Right. Yeah, I know. Definitely. Yeah. I was known in school as a goody two shoes and teacher's pet quite often because, you know, I was always trying to please the adults around me. You know, I don't remember like beyond the age of 4 or 5, but I'm told that initially when I was born, my mom was experiencing her own rebellion, I think, at the time a little bit. But by the time I was like 5 or 6, she kind of got her stuff together. And so, I mean, I know that these things that I don't remember affect me, but unfortunately, because I don't know about them all or don't remember them all, I don't really understand 100% how or why they affect me. You know what I mean? And I think that's one of the hardest parts is trying to figure out something that happened to you that you don't know about or don't remember. And that's just... that still blows my mind a little bit, but.
Yeah, it's so true. Because I mean, what happens when we're older, then you can sometimes even remember the moment when you kind of came to that conclusion, you know, it wasn't safe to say what I really want, or it wasn't safe to say what I, you know, how I feel about something.
Right.
If it happens earlier, then you don't really know.
Yeah. And it's not even necessarily that it wasn't ever safe to say that. It's just, that's how we felt at the time.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know? 'Cause I mean, you're right. I mean, so my dad recently in October passed away, and I never really had a great relationship with him. Of course, I realize now that that's partially, it's not all my fault, but it's partially due to he was dealing with things with how he was raised as well. And so how he in adulthood went on through life, as we all, you know, mostly do, unless you decide that you actually don't like something and decide to change it, you know, about you, yourself, or your relationships, whatever the case may be. But, you know, I realize now that I probably could have said a lot more to him than I understood I could or felt I could, you know, like I don't.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, I don't think it was as big of a deal as I made it out to be in my head, but.
Absolutely. And I think, it isn't really, I sometimes think, you know, and like a friend of mine is like, her daughter is, I think, 7 now. And so there's always this, oh, maybe what I said to her, what led to her thinking, like, you can't influence her. Like the same incident or the same moment that had me think, oh, there is no such thing as unconditional love or safety in a, you know, relationship. Anybody can kind of pull you out somewhere, or somebody else will interpret that totally differently.
Oh yeah.
You know, and react, you know, build a different story, and, you know, maybe as a result of that turns out to be rebellious, or to do something, go on strike and not do well at school at all, for example. You know, I think there's really no way. All you can do is the best you can, and you can't control how somebody else interprets a situation that happens.
Yeah, absolutely. You can only control what you do and say and think. But yep.
I mean, not even that. You know, like try not think of the pink elephant. Like you can't even control that. But if you kind of, I find if you see that it's basically a lot of steam made up in your own mind, then it loses a lot of the impact.
Yeah, definitely. I find that the most helpful thing I do for myself is to just try to view things from different perspectives at all times. Like realize that my perspective is not the only perspective that could lead to, like, there are different perspectives that could lead to different outcomes. And so trying to think of different perspectives and different outcomes instead of just the one thing, and definitely not trying to focus on just one outcome and realizing, you know, that there are multiple outcomes to any scenario. So, however, I will say that that's also like a control thing that I have too, because I want to tried to imagine all of the possible scenarios so that I can somewhat anticipate and kind of control within my own mind and world what's going to happen.
Yeah. that's a bit of a task, isn't it?
Yes.
And I think what really made a difference for me was to see that literally, you know, I don't know what I'm going to think a second from now. And what makes me think that it's almost arrogant to believe that I can predict how somebody will react to something. Mm-hmm. Because how they react depends on what's going on in their life.
Oh, yeah.
You know, what happened to them in the morning, what phone call they had, whatever else they've got on their minds. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I'm thinking, who am I to think I can predict that? You know, that's ridiculous.
Right. Especially if you don't know them well, you know?
Yeah. I mean, and even if you do, it's like, mm-hmm. you don't know where they're coming from, what's going on in their mind at that moment. Yeah. And especially when I started to say no, and I was really consciously observing, you know, when I'm thinking, when I could notice when I'm feeling myself like that little knot in the stomach, you know, before, mm-hmm. like kind of noticing, oh, so you're expecting them to be upset, and then noticing, you know, are they not, whatever. And right. and also what's behind that quite often. You know, there were all of a sudden things that I could see, things that I'd never seen before, where I was like on my high horse, boy, are they inconsiderate. Mm-hmm. You know, I remember there were moments where somebody had asked me in this kind of like, I need you to come to the school at that hour. So I had to leave home, go to that school, and then she wouldn't show up. You know, no message, no nothing. And I was furious.
Right.
So angry. You know, turns out when I then got hold of her, turns out that her dad had like a heart attack during the night. And she was like in emergency care. They were like all, and so that bloody dress was the last thing on her mind. And she had actually left a message somewhere on an answering machine or something in the middle of the night. I had kind of not seen that.
Right.
And so, well, that kind of put things in a totally different light.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought, well, that kind of thing, I realized, well, how often I had ignored the other side of that, how often I hadn't looked at things from their point of view. You know, where for me, this dress is all I work on, and this is, you know, what my business is about. But for them, it's just one more thing to take care of, you know. And so that also kind of put me in my place a bit.
Right.
And there was a lot more room for compassion and empathy to see, well, actually, yeah, everybody does what makes sense to them, given how they understand the world and what's going on for them.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, I kind of figured out how to say no. And that, so like in your situation, I also figured out that I should say no, because I was saying yes to too many different things. And part of that, I mean, the part of the people pleasing thing is that I like to help others, but I have since realized that sometimes I like to help people almost to a fault, which I didn't ever think would be a thing, but it's totally a thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think realizing that you don't, like what I did, you know, this bending over backwards, you know, at the end of the day, saying no would have given a better service. Mm-hmm. You know, if I had said no to certain projects or to certain deadlines or to certain, you know, take this here, pick this up there.
Right.
Because spreading myself too thin, mm-hmm. you know, it wasn't like, yeah, that's not helping. You
right.
know, then if I'm stressed, then I don't pick up the phone, because it's just like, can't handle one more person who wants something, you know, and people try to get hold of me and I wouldn't pick up the phone. And so like my stress level was at a level where I thought, well, you know, that's not helpful to anybody. You know, if my objective is to give good service to my clients, well, then saying no is part of that. You know, right. not saying yes to everything and then struggling to deliver. And if I burn myself out and hate it so much that I throw the towel, well, then nobody gets a dress, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. When I was in what you would call, I think, uni, while I was going to school for my bachelor's degree, they made us take an ethics class, talked about an ethical theory, and I think it's called egoism or something like that. It's got the word ego in it.
Yes.
That basically states that if you're kind of selfish and do things that just please you all of the time, that it eventually what happens is it creates a ripple effect of happiness and everything for everyone else, which even while I was studying it, because I have always been raised to just be very thinking of others all of the time, even while I was studying it, and even now I kind of struggle with it a little bit, but I'm starting to just now kind of accept it a little bit more and understand it a little bit more. I still believe, of course, that there should be a balance to everything, you know, but I just, when I first started learning about that ethical theory, it blew my whole mind. Because I find, I mean, even my husband, we've been married for, it'll be 11 years, but my husband and I are complete opposites in everything that we do. And that being one of them, I'm always considering other people's feelings and trying to do things for other people and help other people and And he is very most often concerned about what he is doing or what he needs, you know, and sometimes forgets to think about other things. And I never understood how somebody could think that way or why they would think that way until I took this ethical class. And I was like, oh, they think that way because it actually kind of makes sense in a roundabout sort of way.
Yeah. That makes sense to me in the context of, like, if you want to compare it to something, that the airplane thing, like, put your oxygen mask on first.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
It's a bit like, if I burn myself out, then I'm no good to anybody.
Then you can't help anybody else. Yeah, exactly.
And I can't also, that's also the other thing that I learned that was kind of pretty humbling. that really kind of got me off my good girl horse. There was this sense of, I really always felt a lot of resentment. You know, I hate saying no and they shouldn't make me say no. Like, I shouldn't have to say no to this because they shouldn't even ask for it. You know, that was always my thing. And
because if you're thinking of others, then they wouldn't even ask for it in the first place. I would have thought.
Exactly. You know, if they were considerate, you know, people, then they would kind of take into account that that might not be reasonable, you know?
Right.
And then I thought, well, I can't really make my well-being somebody else's problem.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's my job to look after, take care of myself, you know, and to find, to make sure I get the rest I need to do what I want to do.
Exactly.
I can't make that their job. You know, I don't want to hand, I mean, and then one thing is you don't want to hand over the power, but then it's also not their responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, that's mine. And I was like, oh boy.
Yeah. My stepdad always used to say, you've got to toot your own horn because nobody else is going to do it for you. And like, he's not wrong, but he's also like, it also leaks into other things. I mean, and I was just telling somebody the other day, like, you have to take care of your own self and do it because nobody else is going to take care of you for you. And that's such an important thing, especially in today's society where I think so many people are dealing with burnout and, you know, families and the pressures of expectations and titles and just so many things, you know?
Yeah. And that's the thing. It's like, there is this sense of, you know, taking ownership and taking responsibility. Like, it doesn't mean that everything was my fault, you know, but to kind of take ownership. I remember, like, the first time somebody suggested that to me.
Right.
I was like furious. It was this, you know, basically a friend of a friend. I didn't even know him well. And I can't remember even the context. He said, I mean, I'm like, literally, I'm not easily offended, right? You'd have to say something pretty tough for me to get, like, really angry. But he managed, right? He said something that had me furious, like, absolutely furious. And so I wrote him an email or, like, something, you know, it was something like, for once I didn't let it go. And for once I didn't just kind of shut up and be the good girl and, you know, resent him for a while, but swallow it. Like, it was triggering me enough to feel the need to throw back, like, this vile response, like, this, you know, how dare you and whatever. And I kind of wrote him this huge long thing thinking I was going to put him into his place.
Of course, right.
And he came back and said, well, if you're upset about that, that's your problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, what?
Right.
I remember thinking, what? Like, first you insult me and now it's my problem. You know, on top of it, now that is my problem.
Right.
Or my fault or whatever. But then all of a sudden, I remember that moment was like, well, actually, that also means that, well, if it doesn't come from you, if it's my choice how I react.
Exactly.
There was this, like, there was the first moment I discovered the liberation in that.
Yeah.
So after all of that, you know, that was not such a bad incident after all, because there was the first time I got a glimpse of how liberating that is to take on that ownership and take on that responsibility of, you know, my well-being is my responsibility.
Oh yeah, you know? 100%.
Yeah.
I think being married, that's one of the hardest parts of being married is, you know, there are times where I'll say things to my husband, you know, and he'll get upset, and I really truly won't understand why he got upset or how he took what I said. Like, I just don't understand. And then on this, at the same time, I have to remember that he is responsible for his feelings. And so he actually has to do some introspection there and figure out why what I said to him, like, to the core, though, not just superficially, like, what you said upset me. You really have to go back and figure out what in your history or what in your past was done to you or said to you or whatever that makes whatever I said to you upsetting in the first place.
Because absolutely,
how you react.
It's not you. What upset him wasn't what you said. It was like what he thought about that, what that meant, and precisely, you know, what the story he made up around that. And I think it's something that becomes really clear when you think about you drive, right, and somebody cuts through in front, you know, and there will be days when you go, oh, for God's sake, you know.
Yeah.
Like, you know, look where you're going. And other days you go off the rails. And it depends on what you've got on your mind. It's got nothing to do. Like, the incident is the same.
Yeah. You know?
So it's more, it's entirely about his state of mind, what he got on his mind, what he's thinking about, what you said means. That's what creates the upset. Like, none of that. You know, I think for him to realize that lets you off the hook, then he'll realize it's not about that you now can control with what you say and what you don't say how he feels, because you can't.
Exactly. Yeah. And I hate having to tell him that sometimes, because, I mean, it still bothers me to say that, because it still feels like I'm basically saying, I don't care how you feel. But realistically, I'm not trying to say I don't care how you feel. I'm just trying to get you to do some introspection and figure out for yourself why you reacted that way. And because I wasn't trying to hurt you. Like, nobody tries to hurt your feelings, you know? And it's traffic
helping, recognizing also that you can't control how he feels.
Oh, absolutely.
You know? Because you can say the same thing, and tomorrow he's just won the lottery or something happened and he's all chirpy, and the same very same thing does nothing to him.
Yeah. And I love that the traffic example that you gave, is because, you know, there are days where somebody will cut me off and I'll be like, you know, they probably didn't mean to put both of our lives in danger. They're probably just in a hurry and not trying to worry about who's behind them, in front of them, or whatever. I should calm down. They probably have somewhere to be, an emergency, something. And then there's other days where I'm in the hurry and I'm like, you shouldn't have cut me off. Why did you?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
110%.
And I always find this when it's a nice one to observe when you wait for somebody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who's supposed to come, like, you know, arrive at 8, and, you know, it's 8:15, 8:30, and they don't show up.
Yeah.
You know, and how you feel about that, like, you can watch yourself. It's like, you know, especially when you imagine when you're, like, young and you're dating, you know, and your date doesn't show up, and then you try and call, and the phone is off, and initially it's like, oh, maybe he got stuck in traffic, you know, then it's like, maybe there was an accident. Then you're all worried, you know. Then you think, oh, maybe he's forgotten. Oh, he doesn't care about me. You know? Down that rabbit hole. You know, you can go through the entire, you know, range of emotions depending on what you imagine that absence to mean. You know,
absolutely, yeah. And it's a little bit heartbreaking when I think about people who, you know, especially in the dating scenario, because when you're dating, it's, you have to be so vulnerable to begin with.
Yeah.
And so I can't, it breaks my heart to think about somebody sitting at a restaurant and thinking that it has anything to do with them, because it yeah. doesn't at all, most likely. And even if the other person calls you later and is like, oh, I'm never going to date you again because you're crazy and this and that and whatever the case may be, it's still their reaction to you has more to do with them than it ever does had to do with you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
That is a yeah. hard, hard lesson to learn. And I hope.
I wish I had. I mean, you know, like that's the kind of stuff where you think, boy, I wish, you know, I'd been a little bit more clued on.
Right.
I know. Teenager, you know.
Oh yeah. Cause especially when you're a teenager, your emotions are all over the place anyways. And there's, yeah. oh man. Yeah. Like I hope that there are younger like teenagers or 20 somethings listening to this, because girl or man.
Yeah. Yeah. It's actually all a lot simpler.
Yes. Just always think of everybody's reaction as their own, and it has nothing to do with you, because it doesn't. Yeah. So go forward with that knowledge. Great thing. Well, so do you still have your dress shop?
No. I still have my sewing machines and all of that.
Right.
But yeah, it's professionally, it's not on the cards anymore. No.
Yeah. So now you're just a passion coach that teaches people to follow yeah. their passion and move to Spain if they feel like, right?
Well, not necessarily to Spain. I don't have to move to Spain, but it is... Like in my ideal world, everybody does work they're passionate about,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that for many people might be a job, but then the people I support are the ones who want to start their own business
mm-hmm.
to do that.
Right.
And it's quite often creative businesses, but then there's also quite a lot of healers, or sometimes people are like on this mission, you know, to bring out a message that they're really passionate about, usually mm-hmm. based on some personal experience and stuff like that. And because the thing is, like, what I threw myself in the sewing business with this blissful ignorance, that was mm-hmm. a blessing in a lot of ways.
Oh, yeah.
But we're not brought up to run our own business. They're challenges that you usually expect, you know, but then, you know, like for me, the people pleasing one, that was like, boy, that really came from, like, you know,
right
from behind. Like, I didn't expect that at all. And I think most of the time, it's really, nothing is more a journey of personal growth, a crash course in personal growth, than trying to build your own business, because all your stuff comes up. Like if you have things going on, like, oh, you know, I'd rather be a good person than make a lot of money. Well, go try and charge your clients, you know.
Mm-hmm.
If you think, well, no, I'm not good enough, you know, you go try create anything, because you never think anything's good enough. So you never put anything out. And so anything that you've got going on will show up mm-hmm. in that business in this totally ruthless manner. And there's a lot of quick fix temptation offers out there that kind of shape people's expectations, you know.
Yeah.
And so it's like there's a lot of traps that people can fall into, where the, you know, the dream of having your own business turns into this utter nightmare.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So I'm really on that mission to help people make it happen without going crazy in the process. And sometimes it's flattening the learning curve, you know, if it's on, like a lot of people struggle with this whole online tech thing, you know, like, oh, how do I take payments and websites and this and that, and mm-hmm. you know, and MailChimp and whatever. And for me, all that stuff's easy. So it's like, you know, flattening the learning curve and then helping them through those challenges.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. That's great that you have that IT background. So the IT technology company that I used to work for is a startup called TechStack. And what they actually do is try to kind of bridge the communication gap between IT and technical people and small business owners, which I still love what they do. And I still love the owner. I couldn't do the job that I was doing anymore. And it's just because like the role I was in and the things I've gone through and going through and things like that. But I still love the idea of like what they're doing, and I still think that they're going to do great things, and that it's important to bridge that communication gap, because yes. so often small and medium business owners or business owners in general don't have a technical mindset.
True, very true. Yeah. And they get overwhelmed because the learn, it's like it's this rabbit hole, you know?
Yeah.
And people think, oh, you know, I want to, like, they see a webinar and think, oh, you know, you have, like, you know, an online course would be really cool. You know, mm-hmm. They think, oh, yeah, that would be a good idea. You know, I know my stuff. Like, I'm a hypnotherapist. I know what to teach and how to whatever. And then it goes, and before they know, then they go, well, how do I do that? Well, am I going to do a WordPress plugin or platforms or this or that? And then it's like, yeah, but then how do I take payment? Or, you know, Stripe, what's Stripe? What's an API key? And before you know it, you're in this rabbit hole. And mm-hmm. each one of those little elements is actually a world in itself.
Oh, yeah.
And if you don't really, you know, if you know most of that and there's one thing you have to explore, well, then you just do that and that's not a big deal. But if everything is new and the explanations include stuff you don't understand, and mm-hmm. then you just, you know, there's overwhelm right there, you know?
Right, exactly. And then it's right in the thick of that overwhelm where people are like, I'm just not going to do this. Like this.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Overwhelm leads to discouragement, and discouragement has you right at the edge of giving up.
Yep, exactly. That's why you need to follow your passion so that you don't get as easily discouraged.
Absolutely. I do actually, that's exactly, I agree with that, you know, because people often say, oh, you know, your passion alone will not, you know, it's not enough. And that's true. But mm-hmm. without it, you're going to have because it's that passion that drive that carries you through.
Precisely.
When, you know, things don't go your way and when things are a lot harder and when you hustle a lot longer than you ever thought.
Mm-hmm.
That's what carries you through. Yeah,
exactly.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I went through the same thing when I started this podcast. I paid for my hosting and I thought I knew what I was doing. And I was going to wordpress.org and I was going to open my website there. And then I opened the back end of it and I'm like, what is this? Hold up. Wait, I don't know nothing. Luckily I have a friend who's willing to help me with that, and she is amazing and I love her and I will forever be in her debt because that was gonna be the only thing that held me back.
Yeah.
But I'm like, no, I don't care. It doesn't matter what the website looks like at this point. I'm doing everything for free anyway. It's fine. This will be fine. This is fine.
Yeah.
But
and that's the thing, it's the main thing to get it out. And
yes.
then it's never like done and set. It's always, and I think that's also something where a lot of people fall into that trap of, I need to get it right, you
Absolutely.
Know, and there's always like, what the heck is right anyway? And then as if it's somehow final, you know, like
right.
whatever you put out, it's that it evolves,
yes.
you know, and you go well, and like, it's kind of what you come up with now, but like next month, that might change, and then
exactly.
you change it, so there's no big deal.
Right. Yep. Exactly. Yeah. Cause like I have the colors that I've chosen right now are like this tealish mintish color that's mixed with purple. And those are definitely mm-hmm. staying because I'm realizing that both the teal and the purple are really hard to put on backgrounds to things.
Yeah.
But I love them right now. And like as a ombre type thing, they work well, but separately, they're not so great.
Yeah. But I mean, that's the stuff you learn, and you only learn that once you actually step out and put something out there. That's when you mm-hmm. learn these things. You can't make that up in your mind.
Precisely. Yep. But you have to do in order to get it done. And yeah, done is definitely better than not done at all.
Absolutely. That's for sure. Yeah.
Right. Well, thank you so much for meeting with me again. But do you have like a website or anything that people can go to if they want to learn more about your coaching?
Absolutely. It's ankeherman.com, ankeherman, or passionbusinesspodcast.com takes you to the same place.
Passion Business Podcast. All right. Well, there will be a coinciding blog post and I'll put those links up with it and everything. Hopefully, as long as I can get the website up, like I said. And
if not, let me know.
Right. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much. That was a lot of fun.
Yes, thank you as well. You have a wonderful day.
You too. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.